cyber terrorism, eco-terrorism, psychological terrorism. In recent years, the word terrorism has been used in very broad ways. Our linguist Jeff Nunberg traces the history of the word and says it's been controversial since it was first coined more than 200 years ago.
A few weeks ago, the Washington Post disclosed that the global head of news for Reuters had written an internal memo asking reporters to avoid using the word terrorist to describe the airplane hijackers. As he explained it, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. And recent Reuters dispatches have avoided using the word terrorism apart from when they're quoting someone else. Given the circumstances, Reuters' scruples seem excessive. There are times when even-handedness can tip over into moral abdication. But their policy actually goes back more than 20 years and reflects the equivocal history the word terrorism has had. Terrorism is one of those words like crusade, which began its life at a particular historical moment. In 1792, the Jacobins came to power in France and initiated what we call the Reign of Terror and what the French call simply La Terreur. Robespierre called terror an emanation of virtue. Terror is nothing but justice, prompt, severe, and inflexible. And in the months that followed, the severe and inflexible justice of the guillotine severed 12,000 counter-revolutionary heads before it abbreviated Robespierre himself. Needless to say, not everyone shared Robespierre's enthusiasm for the purifying effects of terror. One of the first writers to use the word terrorist in English was that implacable enemy of the French Revolution, Edmund Burke, who wrote in 1795 of those hellhounds called terrorists who are let loose on the people. For the next 150 years, the word terrorism led a double life, a justified political strategy to some, an abomination to others. The Russian revolutionaries who assassinated Tsar Alexander II in 1881 used the word proudly. And in 1905, Jack London described terrorism as a powerful weapon in the hands of labor, though he warned against harming innocent people. But for the press and most of the public, the word terrorist connoted bomb-throwing madmen, and politicians weren't above using the word as a brush to tar socialists and radicals of all stripes, whatever their views of violence. When President McKinley was assassinated by an anarchist in 1901, Congress promptly passed legislation that barred known anarchists from entering the United States. By the mid-20th century, terrorism was becoming associated more with movements of national liberation than with radical groups, and the word was starting to acquire its universal stigma. One of the last groups willing to describe itself as terrorist was the Jewish organization called the Lehi, better known as the Stern Gang, who killed dozens of people when they set off a bomb in the King David Hotel in Jerusalem in 1946. But most of the Third World movements that resorted to political violence in the 1950s and 1960s didn't call themselves terrorist. They preferred terms like freedom fighters or guerrillas or mujahideen. Terrorism became a condemnation, a word used only by the colonial powers. That's the point when news organizations like Reuters started to become circumspect about using the word to describe groups like the IRA and the African National Congress. It seemed to be picking sides, and perhaps a little imprudent, particularly when you consider that former terrorists like Nelson Mandela and Menachem Begin had ended their careers as winners of the Nobel Prize. By the 1980s, terrorism was being widely applied to all manners of political violence. There was a flap over the word in 1989 when the New York Times editor A.M. Rosenthal attacked Christopher Hitchens for refusing to describe the fatwa against Salman Rushdie as terrorism. Hitchens had a good point, though. The fatwa may have been repugnant, but it was far from an act of indiscriminate violence, more like state-sponsored contract killing. But by then, the word terrorism had acquired a kind of talismanic force, as if refusing to describe something as terrorism was the next thing to apologizing for it. By the 1990s, people were crying terrorism whenever they discerned an attempt at intimidation or disruption. Hackers who concocted computer viruses were cyber terrorists. Cult leaders were psychological terrorists. Software companies accused Microsoft of terrorism in its efforts to maintain its Windows monopoly, and Microsoft accused Apple Computer of patent terrorism after the companies got into a dispute over intellectual property. And when photographer Spencer Tunick got 30 people to lie down naked for a picture in front of the United Nations building in New York, a critic described the piece as artistic terrorism at its best. With that kind of freewheeling precedent, it probably shouldn't have been surprising that the Justice Department defined terrorism very broadly in its new anti-terrorism legislation. According to the bill, a terrorist offense could include anything from hijacking an airplane to injuring government property, breaking into a government computer for any reason, or hitting the Secretary of Agriculture with a pie. Civil libertarians are concerned that the notion of terrorism could become an all-purpose pretext, the way racketeering did after the passage of the RICO Act in the 1970s. Actually, that might be a linguistic misfortune, too. Granted, it's natural to appropriate the language of violence when we want to dramatize our zeal or outrage. We make war on poverty, we skirmish over policy, and we cry bloody murder when the newspaper's late. But when things happen that merit the full force of our outrage, a legacy of careless usage can sometimes leave us at a loss for words.
A collection of Jeff Nunberg's Fresh Air commentaries, called The Way We Talk Now, has just been published by Houghton Mifflin.